owner of this, what is the school, or was the school its institution, or was this just a master plan? So the school no longer will need this property?
Mr. Planning Manager.
This property was owned by a bank. Somebody's hoping to buy it, build two lots on it. It was planned for institutional because the school district was looking at this property for one of their future school sites. When the bank got the property and was looking for somebody to sell it to, a couple of people came forward, contacted the school. I contacted the school. They said they were no longer interested in this property.
Okay, because I knew it was institutional, and I knew they had plans for a school, so I wanted to make sure of that.
And then the Parks Commission had periodically looked into this as a future park site, but took no formal action.
I wasn't here for when the plan for the area was laid out. There was a meeting that I was on vacation on. Typically, you would do the master plan amendment before you would approve that. Why did this go the other way around?
I missed it.
You missed it. So now we actually have a plan approved and then after the fact. But the reason I'm asking that is I'm a little concerned about the lot that's on the most, let's see which direction would that be, closer to 76th
East and west.
The terrain there, the grade drops off quite a bit, and it's right up next to the buffer, that wetland. So that's going to have to be watched pretty closely. Do you think you can make sure that that's protected?
I believe they were also going to do something along the line of fence or signage or something. I believe that was something they agreed to do during construction.
Thank you.
Mr. City Attorney.
Mr. Flux can correct me if I'm wrong, or Mr. Dito, but my recollection is that this was not a BIS. It was the result of a certified survey map application and some differing point of views between staff departments as to whether or not a comp plan amendment was required. So it ultimately ended up as a condition of the CSM approval, and that's why it's here now. The CSM was approved by the comp plan. And Mr. Dito shaking his head, yes.
Yes.
So is Mr. Flutz.
There is a motion on the floor that's been seconded. All those in favor, any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Let's move back to G2. Now I can get my rezoning in.
We had a request for number 12 to move that up so the staff could go home.
We can do that next. Let's go a motion to adopt ordinance 2015, whatever it'll be, an ordinance to create section 15-3.0443 of the Unified Development Ordinance establishing a plan development district number 38 for the Milwaukee County, the Farm and Hunger Task Force, and rezone the property from A1 to PDD.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Alderman Willem.
So we just moved back to the Milwaukee County Hunger Task Force item?
Yeah.
And this is a PDD. I had a lot of questions on that because the ordinance that was in there didn't meet what the Plan Commission recommended. Is this new one that I have not had a chance to read address all of those issues?
The City Attorney.
Mr. Dito prepared it, and I point blank said, and that does cover all of the changes from the Plan Commission. His answer is yes. He wanted a little bit of thought from me with regard to a catch-all Ray future development. In other words, there were sidewalks and paving, et cetera, that were part of the original draft PDD that the Plan Commission said no to, but they wanted to make sure the applicant, as well as Milwaukee County, was aware that any type of changes, if you want to put in a 20-foot sidewalk somewhere, et cetera, that it would take city permission to do that, so any type of development change would require city review. And Mr. Dito inserted that as the final provision. It's red near the bottom of page 10. All future development, parent, including but not limited to paving and building, close parent, comma, not otherwise addressed or depicted within the exhibits to this ordinance shall be subject to all applicable City of Franklin rules and regulations, including minor site plan changes, which shall be subject to review and approval by the planning manager as set forth in the UDO section.
Okay, I have a couple other questions on page 4. Under number 2, it says that the livestock is a special use in the PUD, and then below it says that livestock, the following are accessory uses in a PUD, and that's for the grazing. So do those two conflict? One is a special use, and one is a use in a PUD.
Mr. Deagle.
Livestock.
I think it's not conflicting, but they are very closely related to one another. One, the accessory use / temporary use would have to be accessory and temporary in nature. If they wanted to make it a permanent feature or a more substantial feature of this, that would be where the special use would come into play. Because they currently do use goats out there periodically to control some of the invasive species.
Okay. On page 5, under lot dimensional requirements, there's a lot of setbacks. I'm just wondering, have all these been reviewed, and can they be met based on the old building use? Has that been reviewed?
I took a pretty close review. I mean, it's possible I could have missed something, but I did look at everything. They seem to meet everything. I asked both Kevin Haley and Matt King to look at it as well, and they didn't find any problems.
Okay. Page 6, building height. There is a two-story, 35 feet. There is a silo, future silos. Will that fit within them?
Now, I did ask that question as well. I thought that could be an issue, but I asked them, and again, they said that they didn't notice any problems.
Okay.
But I specifically brought that one
did
up.
Did anyone measure
the
current silo that's there? Or?
No, I'd asked for that in my staff comments, I believe, but I don't know if I ever got that information.
Well, maybe that should be clarified, because you wouldn't want to have them take the silo out.
And the height would be important. All the structures that are currently there are permitted uses. But if they did want to replace that silo, we would need to know the height so that they didn't exceed that current existing height.
Same page, 1D, the no tower, no water tower storage tanks, since it's a farm, is that going to exclude for water crop watering tanks?
It could. They would have to come back for a PDD.
Would that be why I would like to see that allowed? I mean that's what they're all about as a fireman. So I would, the city attorney, could you suggest some so it wouldn't exclude them being able to water the crops, having a water tank on the bottom of page 41, 6 in the amendment, under number D, or letter D?
The issue with that is raised water tank.
Way it reads, no water tower storage tank processing equipment.
I understand that. I was talking to
any solution needs to center around raised tanks.
And the issue is there are existing raised tanks?
No.
What's the issue?
It says that they're not allowed to have water tanks, water storage tanks. It says storage tanks.
Without plan commission approval.
There is a farm. Why would they have to come in for something they probably already using? I mean,
wouldn't that be mobile?
I don't know.
Well, potentially could.
It's already a farm, so if it's there.
Not there now. I believe the older woman's just asking if they would ever wish to in the future. They do have public water, so the chances that they would be there are less likely.
The executive director of the Hunger Task Force is here and was at the public hearing and at the Plan Commission meeting, as was the manager of the farm, as was the landscape architect from Milwaukee County Parks. None of them had an issue with this.
Well, I just got this in front of me, so sorry, I'm just asking the questions.
It's the only addition is the last paragraph.
No.
No, there's a lot of changes to it.
But they had no objections to that. You still have the floor, Alvin.
Okay, as far as the landscaping, I don't know if that's one of the things that were struck or not, but it says, The future uses shall provide landscaping in compliance with all requirements set forth in 15-3. Is this so not to interfere with the working farm operations?
Correct. And it would only be for the one parking lot that they're making.
The lighting issues were resolved and removed from this?
At this point in time, it looks like, other than the bollards they're putting by the parking lot, there is no other lighting. But if they would choose to do something in the future, they would have to prepare for it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Alderman Maris.
Sorry. I do have a question.
Alderwoman Mayor.
I'm trying to figure out why the ordinance that we just got before us is the one that we have to vote on right now. Why wasn't that the one included in the packet?
I wasn't sure if we wanted to make those changes now or later, and then I also think this was the attorney.
This was approved by the Plan Commission two weeks ago?
Yeah.
But there wasn't time to
make sure that the wording was okay with the city.
Okay. All right, whose district is it?
Four. Alderman Taylor's.
And I did call him today. He didn't know any of the details, didn't know the big picture, because this was also voted on by the Parks Department, their commission, and county. And he voted in favor of it at that time.
But that was way before the Plan Commission meeting. I just want to make sure that we're voting on what came through the Plan Commission meeting. And I don't have time to read this, so I want to make sure that it's right for the Hunger Task Force.
Mr. City Attorney.
When I talked to the city planning manager this afternoon, prior to that, I, based on a call from the council president, I took the shortcut and called Kevin Haley. He had not looked at it yet, but within half an hour, 20 minutes after that, I sent him this copy, and with the note that this last paragraph would be added. So.
This last paragraph plus the cross-outs of...
He got this copy, which did not... He got a prior copy that did not include the last paragraph.
But we didn't get any copies.
No, it did not go in the packet. What went in the packet is the original, unedited draft that went in the Plan Commission packet. And off the top of my head, 3, 4, 5 motions in front of the Plan Commission were all essentially strike provisions 3-6. Strike provisions 8-9, 10, 11. There were numbers on each one, and that's what Mr. Deedle did. And then there was a catch-all as a reminder, because it's required anyway, but just add a catch-all that says, remind the Milwaukee County and the Hunger Task Force that if they make any development changes, they have to get city permission in the future. Because what it came down to was, there was a lot of detail and a lot of requirements, and at the Plan Commission, someone raised their hand and said, I didn't read this whole package. Expansion or a porch on this prior barn building and changing it into a visitor center? And the answer was yes. So that's where all the motions came from, because there are future plans, but they're years down the road. So they come back in. So this is very simple. This is basically saying what's there is A-OK, everything, which there were different uses, some were legal, non-conforming, which is why now it's in the PDD. Everything's legal, and everything that's there is just fine. That's bottom line, all this is.
There was no accommodation for a visitor center in any zoning classification within the city. So here we fix it. That's bottom line. Alderman Mayor.
Is Matt here?
No.
Is somebody representing Hunger Task Force here?
I saw Mrs. Tesler walk in, but she must have left.
Okay. Well, if we could just relay this to them. They mentioned the food pantries that they serve, and I know they serve St. Martin de Tours as well, but it's not mentioned. They do mention St. James, and I just want to make sure, since it's located in Franklin, I think it's important that we serve our Franklin food pantries as well, and I think that recognition of St. Martin de Tours that serves hundreds of Franklin families, I think it needs to be noted here, and I think they could be reminded of that to make sure that that stays that way. Secondly, I just want to let them know, since this is pretty much of a fairly significant historic site in Franklin, it's got a significant history with Franklin, I'd like to see in their visitor center some notification of that, some history laid out, some plaque or something delineating the history as the work farm and where it came from and how it's evolved to where it is today. And then lastly, I would just like to make sure that they stay in close touch with the fire department as they make whatever improvements or changes or additions that they plan so that they're not surprised by any fire code down the road. And I'm sure you're going to do that. I just want to remind them of that. Thank you.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, what we have here for the audience information is a working farm. And I was a little surprised to see all the lighting and sidewalks being requested on a working farm. I've never been to a farm where they had to have sidewalks. And so what we're trying to do is remove some of this language that's being placed upon them, because all they want to do is take an existing old historic building and turn it into a facility, so when people are there, there is actually a bathroom there and a place for them to come and congregate. So we felt it was a lot of language, and you probably can't see that well from here, but there's a lot of strikeouts, and that's why all the questions are coming up. So I've had a chance since we've been sitting here to look through this. The ones that are red strikeouts are actually the ones that I had struck out on my original draft, and I'm comfortable with voting on this this document. Hesitance.
Okay, we've got a motion. It's been made and seconded. Any other discussion? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve? I'm sorry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Move on. It's been a request to move up in the order. Item G15, the 2015 City of Franklin Community Health Needs Assessment Report. Mr. Wookerer, our health officer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Common Council. But to be brief, the purpose of this agenda item is to present this report to the Common Council for acceptance and be placed on file. The report will aid the Franklin Health Department in discharging its duties to promote health and prevent disease and injury within the city. The Board of Health itself has already reviewed and accepted this, placed it on file, as well as the state of Wisconsin when they did our July 22nd review of duties and responsibilities of the local public health department, and found this to be in compliance with all statutes.
A couple of questions from me. I don't want to belabor the subject. First of all, thank you very much for the excellent work on the several issues that we've, the several reports that we've been working on lately. Thank you very much. What was the number of surveys sent out? Do you know?
Yes, I do. The survey description is on page 13 of the report. We sent
729 back. I was just curious as to how many you sent out.
Over 3,000. A 24% return.
Not bad. And looking through the charts, on the chart on page 5 of the report, discusses the wellness promotion scale average scores. And I note on the bottom, emotional, spiritual, and intellectual are low. But then if you turn the page and subsequent charts where there are self-assessments, that emotional, social, and intellectual never even appear. I'm just wondering how we, you and me, and the city can address those issues, except for figure 6, which indicates depression. We can talk about that more later, but that's a concern, especially in light of, so, good. Any other questions? Alderman Mayer.
First of all, nice job, Bill. Bill, the only thing in here I was curious about would be how we compare to other communities. If there's any kind of data available that could show our chart comparatively speaking.
Well, one of the unique elements of this health and wellness report is I actually tried to assess health and wellness. When you bring that subject forward to most people, they immediately talk to you about their diseases or deficits or problems. So I tried to assess health, and Consequently, I did canvass all the health officers in the Southeast region. None of them have actually tried to quantify health, which was the first part of this report where I used work done by a professor that I engaged the National Wellness Society, Craig Becker, and his assessment tool of health. So there's really no comparable to another community relative to what is health. I think the takeaway message, as Mayor Olson presented, is we do have residents making daily choices that will benefit their health and wellness. Relative to the concerns of the general population, categorically across the board, physical activity and nutrition rank high. We're like everybody else in Wisconsin, perhaps in the nation. Secondarily, our diseases are not unique. So cardiovascular diseases and diseases related to arthritis are always at the top of the ailments that plague us in terms of diagnosis diseases.
Thank you.
Alderman Mulhern.
Well, discussion before motion. So I'm going to make a motion to accept the 2015 City of Franklin Community Health Needs Assessment Report and place it on file.
Second.
Okay, any more discussions? That's the right way to do it.
No.
No.
But
to first.
Which is what I said.
That's right. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you for your support. I'll be glad to discuss it further.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Nice job.
We'll move back to item G4, a status report related to Buxton Company and retail recruitment efforts.
Here.
Alderman Will.
I would like to request the presenter be able to present his information before we make a motion, not a motion before discussion, because there are three suggested possibilities for motions, and we wouldn't know how to make that without having a discussion.
Yeah.
Well, let me get this pulled up here.
Okay.
Well, I am Cody Howell with the Buxton Company. As you, many of you will know, we partnered with the City of Franklin end of 2014 to assist you with retail recruitment, so specifically economic development efforts. I also have Eric Brown with me today, one of our senior account executives with the company, as well as Cheyenne Robinson as well, which is the day-to-day contact, the account manager that's been working very, very closely with Nick throughout the process. The intent for us today, as far as our purpose for being here, is that at this point we're roughly 5 months into what we term implementation, so that active engagement and involvement with retailers. And it's at this point in the process that our standard practice is to come out and provide a full update to the full council as far as what has been done to date, where we are, and then also where we go in the future. So just to bring everyone up to speed as a reminder, the intent of the Buxton Partnership is assisting you to lay out really a data-driven, strategic, tactical retail development plan. So identifying out of the universe of over 5,000 retailers, which retailers are truly most realistic for your community, which ones should those recruitment efforts be focused on. And we do that through leveraging our 20-plus years of experience working with almost all major retailers in the marketplace, helping them with site selection decisions. At the end of the day, what's unique about Buxton in the market is that we leverage that 20 years of experience with retailers in using our unique proprietary approach to retail recruitment. And really, there's three core pillars to that process that I wanted to quickly walk the full council to and then get into the meat of today's information. So, again, we're taking that data-driven approach. And what's different here is that this is really coming from the backbone of retail experience versus taking a do-it-yourself approach, going out and seeking out information that's available online, or even looking at other various software packages that are online that essentially, at the end of the day, you're buying information that we provide to clients and prospective clients at no cost. So in terms of the three core pillars to the Buxton approach, it's consumer profile, so understanding who your constituents are from a retailer's perspective, drive time trade area, so where can those retailers expect consumers to come from, but then also looking at what we call the what else factors, the retail market conditions. And it really, again, begins with the who component. So from about a 10,000-foot view, when we look at what the data tells us, the average overall, not saying that everyone fits the mold of this, but at a 10,000-foot view, we look at the demographics and the different components of the market. We see the age range of 45 to 64, average household income north of the 90,000 mark, educated individuals, and also prefer upscale housing. When we dig a little deeper and we start to look at how these individuals start to live their lives, they're savvy investors. They typically belong to country clubs. From a conservative standpoint, or from a political standpoint, they're relatively conservative. And also, they're interested in investments. From an interest standpoint, they're supportive of arts. They live an active and fit lifestyle, and they enjoy daytime entertainment. The Buxton segmentation system is what really allows us to understand traits such as that, also thousands of other traits about every household essentially across the country. And really, the Buxton segmentation system is what's widely adopted in the retail industry by most all major retailers in terms of looking at who their most valuable preferred consumers truly are. But essentially what this allows us to do is segment every household in the United States into one of 71 different segments based off of how they live their lives and how they spend their money every single day. General rule of thumb, the further left an individual is on this scale, the more affluent lifestyle that individual leads. The further right you move across the scale, the more socioeconomically challenged these individuals are. Obviously, life stage is a component of this. There's many other factors that feed into this. But from a retailer view, what this really speaks to is what is that individual's power of wallet or their respective concept. So to give you an idea, one of these segments makes up about 11% of your total population within your market trade area. We call them the J34 aging in place. You can see they're middle-class seniors living suburban lifestyles. A couple of characteristics about these individuals. With 100 being average on the index scale, they're four times as likely as the average household to be retired. They're 1.8 times as likely as the average household to travel or visit cruise websites. They own U.S. savings bonds, 1.8 times as likely to be interested in how-to TV shows, so interested in do-it-yourself. But then also, they enjoy classical music. And again, there's thousands of other attributes that we could go on and on about each of these 71 different segments. When we look at all of the households within your trade area, we now see how these individuals are distributed across the segmentation scale. So we definitely see there's three segments that really make up the majority of your general population. That J34 we talked about makes up roughly 11%. Another 7.5% is made up by what we call a K40 or Bohemian group. They all have these nice little names. And then another 7 to 7.5% falls within that I-31 or blue collar comfort. So these are middle class families, you can read there, living solid blue collar jobs. And again, you can see the makeup of that consumer population. So really what this is doing for a retailer is starting to unearth the consumer complexion or the makeup of who these individuals are in your market. It starts speaking that retailer language as far as will they shop in their store and will they dine in their restaurant. The second component to the Buxton approach is really understanding that wear factor. And this is where we're really starting to look at from an analytical standpoint, from a retailer's perspective, what is your overall market trade area? So when we look at the area of 76th and Rosslyn, we determine, based off of a number of different factors, household distribution, road networks, existing retail landscape, all the factors that impact how far an individual would travel to that site, we were able to see that really the overall trade area is around that 15-minute mark. Not saying that that area, that encompasses 100% of every potential consumer, but that's the day-in, day-out, sustainable consumer base to retailers. When we look at that 15-minute trade area, we know that based off political boundaries, you're just over that 36,000 market population. However, when we look at it from a retailer's perspective, that 15 minutes, you increase to 206,000 strong within that 15-minute trade area. Now, what we know about retail from our 20 years experience is there's not a one-size-fits-all when it comes to retail. What I mean by that is different retail categories look at varying trade areas because you and I as consumers are less willing to drive a longer distance to go get groceries than we are to, say, go clothes shopping or to go make that nice furniture purchase. So as we work through the process, we truly are leveraging how a retailer views that market. So instead of just moving forward at the overall 15 minutes, when we look at the grocery category specifically, we're really identifying a 10-minute trigger. When we look at an apparel retailer, we're looking at a 15-minute. When we look at a furniture retailer, we're looking at a 20-minute. Now, the next component in this process is what we term internally oftentimes the what else factors. So what are the other factors, the other retail market conditions that impact if a retailer could or could not be successful in this respective location? Begins with looking at competition. So looking at what other types of retail are within that market. That's looking at, within that trade area overlap, is there a high density of consumers or is this area that's just not populated? We're looking at things like, obviously, the Southridge Shopping Center. All these different factors that feed in from a competitive standpoint. Another factor that feeds into this is area draw. So think of this as the other factors within that market that draw consumers in outside of those that live within that market. So you can see we've listed a few there on the screen that would draw consumers in. But think of this as obviously the Rock Sports Complex, the New Hampton Inn that opened late last year. Some of the botanical gardens, all those other factors that exist in this market that are draw factors for consumers. And then we're also looking at accessibility. So essentially from a retailer's perspective, how easy is it for consumers to navigate into this proposed retail development? So this is where we're looking at road score, traffic counts, obviously your proximity to 94 and 43, the accessibility of both 45 and 36 in that market. There's a lot of attractive qualities or factors within that market. Now, taking these three core components inclusive of each other does not explain what retailers are like to fit. But when each of these three work in conjunction with each other, it allows us to take the universe of retail, which, by the way, is over 2 million locations across the country. This is a very zoomed-out version just so that you can see. Each of the dots on the screen represents about 32,000 retail locations. For a retailer, retailers are not pioneers. They have to know where have we gone before and been successful. Retailers are looking to replicate past success, but more importantly, avoid past failures. So the unique component about the Buxton methodology and approach that no one else in the marketplace has the ability to do is to identify out of these 2 million locations how many out there are markets that are very, very comparable to your market based off of these factors we looked at. Not saying you're similar to that city, but similar to all the factors that are in that market. We see each of these red dots, there's 653 locations that are retail locations that are very comparable to your market. That's a very powerful story to be able to tell a retailer, look, we believe that you should expand to Franklin, because not just because we love your brand, but because we know you've been successful in markets just like ours, and here's those 8, 9, 10 locations. Now, so again, we worked off of narrowing that universe of 5,000 retailers total down to that subset to really focus recruitment efforts on. And what we found is really that subset really falls into 6 different classifications. Obviously, from a competitive standpoint, to protect this kind of information, we're not sharing the actual names of retailers. Obviously, the full council has that information. But for the point of tonight, the retailers that have been focused on today really fall into these 6 different categories, ranging from dining, so restaurants, all the way to more general retail, sporting goods, apparel, and so forth. Now, once we were able to get to that point of the process, this is where we moved into implementation. This is really where we've been for the last 5 months. Typically, it only takes us about a month and a half or so to get to this point in the process. But just to give you an idea of the life of the partnership from early November when we entered into this partnership to where we are today, you can see the full progression of this partnership. So early November is when we actually formally moved into the start of that partnership. It really took us about a month's time just internally to identify who would own this, what that team would look like so that we could begin those conversations. In late December, we were able to get to the point of finally delivering that first what we call deliverable. So opening up and sharing the trade area analysis, the consumer profiles, all those market insights, and start sharing the information to you. It was not until late January that we were able to finally complete that process and get to the identification and share with the team here what are those targeted retailers. Once those were approved, at that point, that's where we assemble all the market validation and really start readying all the tools that are needed to go out and pursue the retailers. There was about a two-month delay in there from that point to actually receiving approval to move forward and start with implementation. So typically, what takes us about a month and a half, in this case, took us 4 months to get to. But nonetheless, early April, we were able to actually start that implementation and start working to engage with retailers. So what is that? What does success really look like? I always make it a point in this type meeting to share what success is in the world of retail recruitment. As we shared late November when I was personally here, retail recruitment is a process. It's not an event. Retail recruitment is not something that you can focus on for a few weeks and so forth and expect to be highly successful. Just like I mentioned at that time, success in your beginning stages is laying the foundational, the groundwork of getting engaged with these retailers, making it known to these retailers that you want their brand in your market, that you've done your research, and you're actively pursuing these retailers. That could come in the form of email conversations, could come in the form of conference calls, could come in the form of them actually visiting and touring the community, a number of different factors, but at the end of the day, success is really getting engaged with the retailers. And again, I always make it a point to stress this, because oftentimes I find that there's preconceived notions or opinions of really what success looks like in such a short term. Again, that's why we partner on a multi-year basis, because it is something that takes time to really see those successes. In year one, again, your goal is to get on the map literally in front of these retailers. Now, the 2,000-plus retailers that we work with on the private sector side, they have access to information through Scout, the same platform that the city of Franklin has access to, that they can go see the hundreds of communities across the country that we're personally working with, signifying to those retailers that you are highly interested in retail development. So when a retailer is looking at your market, they can turn this layer on, and they can see that icon right there you see on the screen in front of you, and now they can drill in further and say, oh, okay, we are interested in this market. Let me click on that and see who it is. Then they can click on that icon, get all of your contact information of who the main point of contact is. They can get an email. They can email directly through this platform. So not only is our partnership proactively focusing on retailers that should be looking at your market, there's also the reactive side of this as well for those that maybe already are looking at your market. So results of the Buxton solution to date. Again, we're 5 months into the implementation process, so we're still in the early stages. But right off the bat, the beginning of the second quarter when we began this, you can see in week one, 9 of the 20 retailers replied. We're getting a response from those certain retailers. I bolded there to the side for you some of the interest. Some of these retailers, they've expressed interest in the market, and they found this information to be very compelling. You're now on their short list, on their radar. There's, you can read here, there's casual dining concepts in here that they have identified that they do want to expand in this market, and they truly are doing their research, and they're looking at these different communities. We are now on that retailer short list. We're on that retailer's radar. From my perspective, obviously working with hundreds of communities across the country for a number of years, you're in a great position right now for success in the months to come. To get this level of response, this level of engagement from retailers, you are well positioned. You're in a critical position now to continue forward with the efforts that Nick has obviously been doing in conjunction with Cheyenne, your account manager, of navigating this process. You can see month one, within the first month, another 3 retailers responded. You'll also notice in month one that the number of total retailers jumped from 20 to 21. That is because the point of the Buxton partnership is that any given time, we're focused on getting engaged with 20 given retailers. So what happened in that instance, we got feedback from a retailer. For whatever reason, they just didn't want to come here in the near term. It could be they said a few years from now. It could be whatever it is. They said, look, we love the information, but just not right now. We bring in an additional retailer and start that process. So at any given time, you are focused in year one on recruiting and engaging with 20 retailers. Month two, you can see we picked up another 4 retailers and were able to get engaged with these retailers. And then months 3 through 5, were able to engage with an additional retailer as well as UC. We replaced two other retailers and brought those into the mix. So, again, just wanted to bring the full group up to speed with the progress today.
One thing I'd like to highlight, too, is you see the asterisk at the top of the slide that highlights retail recruitment truly, like Cody mentioned, is a process. It's a sales process. You're selling your communities to these retailers. In a typical sales process, you can take anywhere from 8 to 12 contact points to connect with somebody who's never heard of you, essentially cold calling. Looking back through a lot of the results and the progress that we've been able to measure over these number of months, a number of the contacts, most of the contacts, were actually only took about 5 or so touch points to actually get into dialogue with retailers. Our goal is to actually put you in touch with the decision makers at these companies. Oftentimes, these decision makers are people we're talking to day in and day out on the retail side of our business. So ultimately, we've been successful in shortening a lot of that timeline and actually connecting with somebody meaningful at these retailers.
I will also say that, and I can't release the name for confidentiality purposes, but just within the last few weeks, I've engaged with a chef-inspired local concept to your market that's interested in adding an additional location. Looking very strongly at Franklin, I've had personal conversations with him a number of times on the phone, have provided him comparable information. He's highly interested in your market. So long story short, there's doors being opened for you. You are now on retailers' radars that I am confident otherwise would not have been open for you. So you have retailers looking at your market and they're very interested. So where do we go from here? Continuing forward in the next couple of months, obviously exactly what we've been doing. So helping to break down those barriers of engagement with retailers, course correcting, evolving that strategy where needed, sitting on conference calls with retailers. I know Cheyenne's done that as well in conjunction with your staff here. We truly are an extension to your team. We are that market validation firm that knows how to speak that retailer's language. Now, obviously, we're approaching towards the end of this year, obviously moving into the second year of our partnership at that point. That's where we identify the next 20 sustainable concepts to bring into the mix. So we've laid the groundwork, the foundation, with the initial retailers. Now we bring in the next subset. So now think of this as working a pipeline or a sales funnel, if you will. You're starting to get various stages of conversations with retailers. So those preliminary conversations that have happened in the last 3 to 5 months, now you start those over with a different subset of retailers. And the ones that we're engaged with from year one, we continue those conversations forward and working towards, obviously, that letter of intent stage. That's the desired end result. So our desire is obviously to continue supporting you in those efforts, to be that trusted partner with you. We want you to be successful. Your success is obviously our success. So our desire is to continue that partnership. I know that there's been some internal conversation and discussion around that, but thought it was important to get out today and visit you and bring the full staff, the full council up to speed, just to ensure that obviously the accurate depiction of the partnership today that is fully communicated. So with that being said, myself, Eric, or Cheyenne are more than happy to answer any questions, or if there's certain areas you would like me to expand on or provide additional feedback, happy to do so at this time.
A couple of comments. First of all, we had a frank conversation when you first approached, or when you were first here. My concern has always been that any work that we do together reflects the current market conditions, the current geography, and our current competitive environment. I've got the first 21, and as I look down here, the list of these retailers, it's a nice list, but the majority of it does not reflect where we're at as a community and the ability to follow up with these folks. In other words, most of these require a franchisee.
There's 6 in the group that are franchisee and have given that feedback, and those are different things that those retailers are now very interested in the market. They see it as an attractive opportunity for expansion, and they have provided the feedback that now they have to identify an owner-operator. Either you have the ability to bring one to the table, or the retailers a lot of times have certain franchise groups that have franchisees that are looking, obviously, to add additional locations. So there's 6 of the group that have provided that specific feedback, and I know that they are working on finding those operators, but that is a piece of the puzzle. Obviously, there is no silver bullet to this process, and there's a bunch of pieces that have to work together, and for some, that is a component.
Well, that's all correct, and I appreciate you giving an explanation. kind of interested in finishing here. But my responsibility is to the 35,000 taxpayers who are paying $2,400 a name. They need to see some value for that $2,400 for each of the names. And as I look down the list, you know, there's one that you highlight on the very first bullet point on the previous slide about a casual dining place. They already were in the community and chose not to build. There's another one here, a sporting goods manufacturer. I'm well aware that they're looking for a location. But they've told us, and I know, they ain't coming here because they want to be close to Southridge. But they're on the list. There's another major discounter on the list that just completed a store in New Berlin, not 7 miles down the road. They're not coming here. We work with their engineering consultant who does their site selection for them. We knew this years ago, but they're on the list. My issue is that the data that's provided for us needs to be better, if we continue the contract, needs to be better situated and adjusted for our particular market conditions. You highlight that you take into account Southridge, but as you and I discussed in Cheyenne on the phone several times, between the way you segment your market and your data within that market, it never takes into account, one, it's very difficult for you to do this, but one, our geography and our income. You were using census blocks, which were way too big for any advantage for us. You modified it. I appreciate that. Still not helping. The data that you put here doesn't reflect Southridge. And it doesn't help us as our consultant and partner that now we're faced with, we got to go find a franchisee in order to make this happen. Or we need to find a building for these folks to make this happen, which is why the chairman of the Economic Development Commission originally postponed us doing this project, and I supported him on that. Because we're just not ready. We're spending $50,000 a year. For those of you in the audience, $50,000 last year, $50,000 next year, $50,000 the year after. $2,400 a name. I got to be frank with you. I don't see the value. Nick is probably the last person to use Scout. Probably a couple of weeks now, right?
Actually did use it before our meeting today.
Okay.
And to take that, Nick is the only one that has used Scout from the staff. He's the only individual that's logged in. I know there's another individual with access. Something's prohibiting him from a security requirement on his end that he can't even log in to the information. So Nick is actively using the information, and he is the only one using that information.
And, I've used it a month or so ago. But if we're to continue this contract, we need to have a frank discussion about what the data is that we want. You all have the list of names. Look down that list and honestly say to yourself, is this realistic? Alderman Wilhelm, I know you've got a lot to say.
Well, as far as the one that chose not to build here, that was when the economy went down, and I know exactly which one that was. So if they're on the list now, they may still be interested. So why discount that issue? See, we have nowhere to put them, but yet we have lots of empty buildings. We have a developer who's told us he would like to move forward on proposals.
Well, Alderwoman, I'm going to interrupt you. I apologize for that, but you say we have lots of empty buildings. That's factually incorrect.
Okay, we have empty buildings. How you want to define lots is your prerogative.
Okay.
And we have a development, which is that what was the Fountains of Franklin is now Verde Park, which is has water, sewer, ready to go, and has retail space available. And when I talked to the gentleman that you appointed to the Economic Development Commission, who somehow took my place on these meetings, he didn't even know about the development. And so his comments were, well, I don't think we should talk these. I'm not going to talk to them anymore because we really don't have a place to put them. I said, what about the Verde Park? He goes, what's that? So how can you have someone who's appointed to this who doesn't even know what's available in the community, that doesn't help them. They've been working very hard. And I really do appreciate your professionalism, your assistance. You've always been there. Cheyenne worked with Alderwoman Suzanne Mayer and I working through Scout just last week. It was the first time Alderwoman Mayer had got a chance to really look at that. This is a program that's available for even the current retailers. You can go in there and help a retailer increase their business by finding out what kind of beer people would like, what they're most likely to buy, what kind of wine, if it's a restaurant. We have a really significant resource here that if we had the people that wanted to put the effort into it, we can help the retailers grow their business, which then, in fact, helps other retailers. Retailers want to be next to them when you have successful businesses. Success breeds success. So I really appreciate, Cheyenne, your professionalism, and your knowledge on Scout was really fantastic. You went through that, and I have no doubt that if I had stuck on anything, I could turn to you in a minute, and you would help walk me through that because you were really great with that. And I think that the fact that we've made this much progress in 5 months, even though there's been a lot of delays, not on the consultant's part, but on the city's part, I think we've gone quite a ways with what we've got. And it would be a shame to drop the ball, especially now that Cody and I are well aware of a significant restaurant owner who is very excited. He provided him his first initial data, and he came back with an extremely positive result email. He's asked not to be named at this point. I would like to at least continue that and provide them the data they need. We do not have an economic development director. Many communities spend $100,000 or more on an economic development director